welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, continuing series, concluding, we'll be bringing to a close storylines we've been following on yours truly, Johnny Dollar, One Man's Family later on, but right now, part 10 of 10 of The Cobra King Strikes Back, the story featured on Adventures by Morris, a syndicated broadcast from June 23rd, 1946.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The Cobra King Strikes Back, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
The ancient Khmer priesthood, upon which the people of Cambodia depended to guide them toward new prosperity and a new kingdom of their own, had failed them. The combined parties of Dr. Carter and Captain Friday had found them not strange, wise mystics, but rather degenerate beasts, practicing every sort of abomination in the guise of werewolves. Taquan, the young Cambodian guide, was the only clean, idealistic priest among them. And once he had discovered the state of affairs in the Temple of the Priests, he endeavored to take his American friends out of danger. But here's Captain Friday to tell you.
Well, we slipped from the temple down into the bowels of the Hollow Mountain, through which we'd gained entrance to the temple in the first place. But the priests missed us and, like a pack of wolves, took up the savage chase. They caught up with us as we were descending the first half mile of ladders that clung to the side of this bottomless subterranean chasm. And in the battle that followed, Dr. Carter and our Khmer student friend, Taquan, were plunged to their deaths. But we'd driven off the mad priests. Now we've completed the trip to the bottom of the chasm. We're in the tunnel-like entrance chamber that lay just behind the Great Falls, whose rushing torrent curtains the mountains of the cavern and cuts us off from the jungle outside. Now, Patricia, there's no use crying. We're safely down. No more ladders to climb.
I saw him die. I saw Dr. Carter die. He reached out his hand for me to save him as he plunged past me.
Patricia, men die every day. Death didn't come hard to Dr. Carter. It came the way he wanted it. In action. Trying to help humanity. Can you say anything, Professor LeBrun? I can't stop her.
Oh, let her kite out, Captain. It's nervous reaction. That and extreme fatigue. She'd soon cry herself to sleep.
Oh, what about Celia?
She's worn herself out. We've made a bed for her with Perry's and Skip's coats. Give me yours, and with mine, we can make Patricia quite comfortable.
Good.
All right now, Patricia. Lie down and let me cover you over. There. That's better. Now then, just try to relax. We won't be far away. Come on away, Captain, and she'll sleep. I left Perry and Skip around the corner with a torch. We can talk there without disturbing the girls.
Well, we've got to decide our next move right now, LeBrun. We haven't any food.
I was just coming to see what was up.
Nothing's up, Skip. Just quieting Patricia's all.
Yeah? Oh, poor kids. Now, Perry just went to look at Celia. Oh, here it comes now.
Hello, Captain. Celia's sleeping like she was drugged.
Yeah, she kept groaning in her sleep.
Probably dreaming about her father's death.
You know, it doesn't seem that Dr. Carter's gone. He's such a grand old fellow.
Stop it, Perry. You'll have yourself in a fine state if you begin that.
Who'd ever thought Taquan had it in him? Golly, he must have climbed right up into the middle of the werewolves. He was only half a man, bit and clawed the way he was. But up he went, right into the middle of the fight to help Dr. Carter.
Plunged half a mile down the face of the cliff to his death for his bravery. But what's worrying me is how we're going to get out of this jungle now that we're this far.
Taquan said the horseman that brought us would still be waiting out there.
Yeah, but he said we'd be taken prisoners again without him along to give the password or whatever it is.
Well, the first thing for us all to do is to get some rest. None of us is in any shape for traveling.
Hey, you mean sleep?
Exactly. I should judge it somewhere about 1 a.m. Everyone lie down and get 7 or 8 hours of rest.
What about food? Those 7 or 8 hours will put us just that much nearer starvation. I think we should get underway immediately.
I don't agree, Professor. Right now, we need the rest much more than food. By daylight, we'll be ready to meet the situation.
Why, sure, teacher. What can we do in the dark? Besides, we'd have to carry the girls. They're completely exhausted.
Very well, Captain. We're in your hands.
Good. Now then, let's stretch out here on the floor. It's perfectly dry and plenty warm.
The dust 6 inches thick. Should be a soft bed.
Some bed.
Well, good night.
And don't kick the covers off.
Night, Skip.
Professor, what do you suppose these things we've seen mean to the future of Cambodia?
You mean the degeneration of the Khmer priesthood?
Yes.
Oh, that's easily surmised, Captain. It means the uprising that the French government feared will not take place. There is no one to lead a revolution now that the priesthood has reduced itself to mere animals.
I imagined as much. But I don't like to trust my judgment in this sort of thing. I still have a heavy responsibility to the French government. I'd feel a lot better if that seven-headed cobra were out of the way.
You needn't worry about that any longer, Captain.
No? Well, what do you mean?
Simply that the seven-headed emerald cobra has again vanished.
Vanished? You know that?
Absolutely. I had it from Ta Quan not an hour before he was killed.
Well, tell me about it.
Ta Quan himself hid the seven-headed idol when he discovered how the priesthood had fallen to pieces. His idea had been to keep the cobra secreted until he could reorganize and build up a new group of faithful priests.
What about the emerald idol?
Ta Quan gave me to understand that no one will ever know what has become of it. Perhaps, in centuries to come, some faithful one will uncover it. Perhaps, when a new priesthood has grown up, and Cambodia is a second time ready for the establishment of a new Khmer Empire.
Then I can safely return to Saigon and report that my work is done. That Phen Lo the killer is dead, and the Cambodian uprising crushed.
I think your conscience is clear, Captain.
Good.
Well, I'll take my 7 hours of rest more easily now, Lebrun.
Good night, Captain. Safely return to Saigon. I wonder if any of us will do that.
Hey, what's that? Captain Friday, Captain!
You call, Skip?
Hey, listen. Listen to them firearms.
Guns, all right.
I didn't know these Cambodian hillmen used army rifles.
You awake, Perry? Say, that doesn't sound like native gunfire.
Yeah, well, native or civilized, it means there's folks out there we don't care to meet up with.
The girls are still sleeping quietly.
Oh, you up, Professor Lebrun?
Yes, I've been awake for half an hour. I went back to see how the girls were getting along.
Have those guns been firing all that time?
What guns?
Well, listen.
That's strange. I never expected to hear that sound 200 miles deep in the jungle.
Well, strange we'd be able to hear gunfire like that when there's a roaring curtain of water over the mouth of this cave.
Oh, it's quite plausible. This far back in the field, Captain. But as soon as we approach the waterfall, every other sound would be killed.
Yeah? Well, what do you say we hike down to the mouth of the cavern and see what we can see through the waterfalls?
Well, I'm game. No one can see us through the water.
That's a good idea. But one of us better remain here. The girl should awaken and find no one around.
Oh, yeah? Well, say now, looky here, I've had enough excitement to last me. I'll stay.
Look here, Skip. I know you want to go, and I'll let me stay.
Oh, go on, Perry.
No, really, Skip, I mean it. I'd rather stay.
Yeah, well, so would I. So what do you think of that?
My, what a couple of ardent nights. Why don't you both stay?
Oh, for the love of Pete.
That's just as well. Both of you stay. Professor and I will go down and look over the situation.
Oh, well, come on in, Perry.
You know, Captain, our young men have suddenly become very conscious of their duty to the young ladies.
Hey, what was that last crack?
Oh, never mind, Skip. Come along.
Just a minute.
Now, what's eating you?
You've been making sheep eyes in a certain direction ever since we got started on this trip.
What's it to you?
Maybe nothing and maybe a whole lot.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
Hey, listen, fella. You trying to get tough with me?
Listen, Skip, you may be a tough detective back in San Francisco, but out in this jungle, you're nothing. At least to me, you're not.
Oh, yeah? Well, I can hit just as hard here in Cambodia as I could in SF. And if you don't think so, maybe you want to try one on for size.
You think I'm going to stand around twiddling my thumbs while you make a play for Patricia? You're crazy.
Yeah. What?
I say if you think
I... Hey, wait a minute. Did you say Patricia?
You heard me.
Hey, take it easy. We're all mixed up here. Wait a minute now. Let's get this thing straight. But You mean to say you're in love with the chief secretary?
Well, who in Sam Hill did you think?
Oh, golly, Perry, that's great. Congratulations, boy.
What's so funny? You think I don't mean it?
Forget it. Hey, you know, I thought you was falling for Celia.
Celia?
Why, sure. Hey, I ain't got anything against you. Come on, let's shake and forget about this argument, huh?
You mean you aren't in love with Patricia?
No, of course I ain't.
Well, I'll be. Sure, I'll shake. Say, we're a pair of boobies, huh?
Mr. Friday? Boss, where are you? Where is everyone?
Oh, looky there. Now, we've gone and woke up the girls.
Oh, come on. Let's get to them before they think we've deserted them or
Professor
something.
Professor LeBron, Perry, where is everyone?
We're coming. Everything's all right.
Oh, there you are. Gee, for a minute, I couldn't make out what happened. It's so weird and dark with only the reed torches.
Yeah, well, both Perry and I are standing by. Oh, hello, Celia. You out of bed?
Oh, I guess so. I'm still so groggy, I can hardly think straight.
Where's Captain Friday and the professor?
Hey, listen. You hear that?
Guns!
Rifles!
Army rifles.
Well, who is it?
Well, Captain Friday and the professor have gone down to the waterfalls to have a look. Oh, don't get up, Patricia. Lie there and rest until they get back.
Well, I feel like my old self since that sleep, except that I'm awfully empty.
Hey, Celia. How about you and me taking a walk down a tunnel a ways?
Why, of course.
Yeah, I want to show you what a pig pen we slept in last night.
Why did Skip take Celia away, Perry?
Why, I think he had something to tell her.
Oh? Celia's a sweet child.
Uh-huh.
I think so, too.
Patricia.
Hmm?
Patricia, have you ever been in love?
Why, yes.
You have?
Of course. Seemed an awfully long time until it came to me. You see, I'm almost 22, and I thought sometimes I'd never fall in love. But now that it's here, I'm glad I waited. I think I'd lay right down here and die if anything should happen to spoil it.
Gee.
Why did you ask, Perry?
Well, as a matter of fact, that's exactly how I felt, only I've had to wait 27 years for it.
Oh. You're in love then, Perry?
Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. With whom?
I'll tell you if you'll tell me.
Why, I Well, all right.
It's with you, Patricia.
Oh?
And you?
Oh, don't be silly, Perry. Who else could it be but you?
What? Honestly? Honestly, Patricia? Do you mean it? Hey, now sit up, Patricia. How can a man do the right thing when a girl's curled up like a kitten?
No hardship or adventure can prevent the entrance of the little fat god of love with his bow and arrow. Deep in the great cavern under the hollow mountain and behind a curtain of waterfall, Perry Mills has just laid his heart at Patricia's feet and has been accepted. A little further down the cavern, Skip Turner and Celia Carter are standing in the shadow of a smoky reed torch. Skip also has a glowing heart, but a very reluctant tongue.
And I brought you down here to ask you sort of a question, Celia.
What sort of question, Skip?
It wasn't a thing, I reckon.
But you said you had a question.
Yeah.
Oh, aren't you funny, Skip?
Yeah. Golly, I like to hear you say my name.
You do? What?
Nothing. I was just thinking out loud.
Oh.
Hey, did you ever think about getting married?
I guess every girl thinks about marriage.
Uh-huh. I guess they do, all right.
Yes, I guess they do.
Yeah, guess they do. Personally, I never thought much of dames.
Oh?
I mean, until now.
Oh.
Yeah. You see, I've been kind of chasing around all my life, I guess. Being a detective, you don't know what you're going to be doing next.
And then I guess a dame don't care much about a guy that has to maybe be messing around in the seamy side of life, even if it is in a good cause.
Uh-huh.
And so I... Well, I never had nothing to do with dames.
I see.
But, well, now things are different, see? And, well, since we've been on this trip together and had a lot of time to loaf and think about things and we got to know each other and, things are just different, that's all. I guess I ain't making myself very plain, Emma, senior. See, when a guy feels like I do and, Oh, for Pete's sake. Look here, Celia. What do you say if you and me up and gets married, huh?
What? Skip.
Oh, gosh, I didn't mean to surprise you. I've been trying to lead up to it. I guess I made a mess of it, huh?
Oh, I knew you were going to say it. I knew it. And I wanted to stop you, but I couldn't find anything to say.
Stop me? You mean you don't want to?
Oh, Skip, I'm so sorry. I didn't know until you started to talk that you felt like this. Honestly, I didn't.
You mean you don't think you ever could learn to like me?
Oh, I do like you. I like you tremendously. Honestly, I do.
Well, then, what's the rub?
Oh, Skip, how could you be so blind? Haven't you seen the engagement ring on my finger? It's been there all the time.
Hey, you mean you're engaged to someone else?
Uh-huh. I have been for almost a year. He's a university professor. Oh, but how could you have missed the ring?
Oh, I saw it okay, but... Well, I guess I ain't much up on this sort of thing. Well, I never heard you mention anybody else.
Oh, I am sorry.
Oh, that's okay. It was a nutty idea.
I think it was wonderful of you.
Yeah?
Really, I do. I'm awfully proud you asked me.
Golly. And you don't think I'm one of them dumb clucks that...
No, really. I'd love awfully to be friends.
Okay, sister. You and me are friends.
Hey, what's this you're talking about? Did you say friends?
Hey, looky here, Perry. What'd you have to come popping up here like this for?
But you've been so long, we were afraid something was the matter.
Besides, we've got some news that won't keep. Tell him, Patricia.
Oh, you tell him.
Well, it's like this. Patricia and I are going to be married the minute we hit Saigon. The trip home will be our honeymoon.
Well, doggone.
Oh, Patricia, I'm so glad.
Well, Perry, I guess you're the best man after all. You win, I lose.
Oh, Skip, you make me feel miserable.
Oh, forget it. What's an egg like me want to get married for anyway? Hey, don't it seem like the chief and Professor LeBrun's been away a long spell?
Hey, I'd forgotten all about them.
You don't suppose anything's happened?
Hey, listen.
Hey, the guns have stopped.
Shouldn't we go down to the waterfall? Maybe they're looking for us.
Of course. We should have gone sooner.
Hey, how about me going ahead and having a look, huh?
Let's all go. I don't want to be separated. Of course we'll go together.
Well, I don't know about that now.
Well, of course we will. Do you think for one moment that I let Perry walk into danger alone now that I...
Of course. We'll all go. It's strange they haven't returned. You might know that we'd be worried.
Yeah, that's what makes me think they're on a mess.
Oh, please don't say that. I couldn't bear it if anything should happen to another one of us.
We're getting near to the entrance. The sound of the falls is increasing.
Yes, it's just around that next corner.
Yeah, well, I ain't sticking my nose around that corner till I have a peek. Captain Friday and the professor run into a trap. It won't help us none to do the same thing.
That's a good idea. There's enough light filtering in through the water to give us a good view of that last stretch of cave. Now, Patricia... You and Celia, stay here a moment while Skip and I sneak up and have a look.
Oh, Perry, All right, I won't be foolish.
Ah, that's a sweetheart. I won't be long. Come on, Skip.
Hey, Celia, as long as we ain't kissing, how about shaking on it?
Sure, Skip.
Atta, baby.
You coming, Skip?
Yeah, sure, ride with you. Keep the shirt on, will you?
Say, why'd you shake hands with Celia?
Well, me and her are friends.
Oh, sure, but do you have to shake hands with your friends every time you go around a corner?
Oh, go lay down, will you?
We're coming to the turn.
Yeah? Well, nobody can hear us on account of the noise of the water.
Just as well to be careful, anyway.
Here, let me stick my head around the corner.
Well, be careful.
Sure.
See anything?
Nope.
Captain Friday and the professor not there?
Nope. And nobody else. He's...
Strange. Think it's safe to bring the girls down?
Well, I can't see anything out of the ordinary. Sure, let's wave to them to come along. Wave your torch.
Well, they got the signal. They're coming.
Oh, a swell mess. Hey, are you half as hungry as I am?
Oh, don't even mention it.
I'm telling you, it's indecent to treat a guy's insides like this. How can a fella expect a stomach to have any respect for him when it don't even give it an even break?
You'll have to answer that for yourself. It's all right, Patricia.
Oh, well, what about the boss and Professor Lebrun? Are they all right?
They're not in sight. But there's no one in the cave ahead of us. We're safe enough.
Then are we going down to the entrance?
Well, might as well, don't you think, Skip?
Yeah, might as well.
You know, Skip, you and I are going to get good and wet before we get through with this.
Now, you mean wading out around the falls?
Yes, carrying the girls.
Yeah, well, I sure wish we had some of them giant human pack horses that carried us behind the falls coming in. Hey, look out! Run!
Hey, let me go! Let loose of me! Harry!
They got me too, Patricia. Hey, you big ape! Quit choking me! Get your hand off my throat!
Don't fight, Patricia. It's no use. Don't fight.
What are they going to do with us? What are they doing with us?
Well, Skip, I hope you're satisfied.
Yeah, what do you mean?
You asked for some of those giant Cambodians to carry us, didn't you? Well, you got them.
Yeah, well, how'd I know this was a place where wishes come true?
They're taking us under the waterfalls. They're taking us under the falls.
Carried us through that, all right.
Yeah, I'm beginning to think they run a free ferry service between the bank of this river and the cave behind the falls. Oh, here we go up on the sand.
Oh, looks like they're going to put us down. Yep. Oh, there.
My, I'm glad they put us down. My carrier never has had a bath. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, mine was strong, too. I couldn't move a muscle when he got a grip on me.
Well, now what? Uh-oh, they're motioning us to follow them.
Just as tongue-tied as ever.
Hey, shall we try to make a break for it?
Oh, we wouldn't have a chance. Even if we did get away, what good would it do us with 200 or 300 miles of jungle between us and civilization?
Yeah, I suppose so. Hey there, big boy, don't push. We're coming.
Well, there's one consolation. Probably we'll be with Captain Friday and the professor soon.
Hey. Hey, listen. Drums.
First Army rifles, now drums.
Oh, boy, when I tell all the boys in San Francisco what I've been through this last couple of weeks, their eyes will bug out a foot.
Oh, San Francisco. Oh, I wonder if we'll ever see it again. When I close my eyes and think of the San Francisco skyline, I think it's the most beautiful picture in the world.
It's sort of like thinking about heaven, isn't it?
Here, you folks, stop it. You can't get sentimental and keep up your nerve. Hey, we're coming to a break in the jungle.
Look. Oh, look there.
Oh, yes. Yes.
French territorials. Look, French soldiers.
Hey, you mean they come to rescue us?
I don't know. I don't know, but there they are. You can see them, hundreds of them. Look, tents and everything.
Well, there's Captain Friday. Boss! Boss, are you all right?
And there's Professor Lebrun.
Hey, look, Perry. These guards of ours don't seem to be the least bit scared of them French soldiers. Fight seems kind of funny.
There's something queer, all right. Oh, let's wait here. Patricia's coming with Professor Lebrun and the captain.
Well, well, well. So you're a prisoner again, Skip. Getting to be quite an habit, isn't it?
Oh, hey, look here, teacher. Lay off the comedy, will you? Hey, what's the lowdown?
Well, the lowdown, Skip, is that we're rescued at last.
Hey, Ed!
That's right. Patricia. One of the French military spies saw us being taken to the Temple of Priests aboard the ponies in this neighborhood. He reported at Angkor that we were prisoners, and the French government immediately sent troops into the jungle.
Fast work.
Troops got this far and were stuck. Our captors seemed to have vanished at this point. It wasn't until this morning that their native guides ran under the cave behind the falls. Well, as luck would have it, they were still in the cave when Professor Lebrun here and I went down to the falls, and they fell on us and carried us outside.
And what a drubbing I received. I'm sore in every muscle.
So when the French commander heard our story, he sent the natives back in for you.
Yeah, well, you'd have thought we was being taken prisoners instead of being rescued.
Well, then we're going back home now.
That's right, Patricia.
Oh, Perry, did you hear that?
Hear, hear. What's this?
Oh, boss, I forgot to tell you. You're going to have to find a new secretary.
What?
Say, would you mind telling me just what went on in that cave while the professor and I were gone?
Sure. I'll tell you, Chief. You see, Perry here put the third degree on Patricia, and he got a yes for an answer.
And you?
Who, me? Oh, I had my usual luck. You know, Chief, I never was good at getting the right answer when a dame was mixed up in the case.
That is how the remainder of the Carter expedition into the jungles of Cambodia were finally brought safely back to civilization. But how did Captain Friday and Skip Turner and the others return safely to San Francisco? Well, for one thing, the French government gave them an airplane to fly to Australia, an airplane that had a breakdown in a most unfortunate place, right out over the Indian Ocean.
Hear that, Skip? We've got motor trouble.
Hey, you mean this airplane's going to let us down in the middle of the Indian Ocean?
Can't keep her up much longer.
She's dead. We're going down.
Hey, Chief. Chief, there's an island. Head her into the wind. There's an island.
Do the best I can.
Ain't no bigger than a pocket handkerchief, but any island's better than no island.
Amen, brother. Amen.
And that's just a taste of the newest Adventures by Morse, which will come to you next week at this same hour. Listen to The Girl on Shipwreck Island, the latest and most exciting thriller yet brought to you by Adventures by Morse.
Adventures by Morse, on Tuned to Yesterday, part 10 of 10 of The Cobra King Strikes Back, from June 23, 1946, a syndicated episode. The man who portrayed Captain Bart Friday in that storyline, David Ellis, had taken over for Elliot Lewis, who had appeared in the first 13 broadcasts of Adventures by Morse. Following The Cobra King Strikes Back, David Ellis would continue his part in the 3-episode, then 10-episode storyline before relinquishing the role to Russell Thorson, who carried it on for the rest of the run. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for One Man's Family, with the last episode to button up a 10-episode run from October 7th, 1950 on NBC.
One Man's Family, brought to you every weekday night at this time, transcribed by Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer, and many other fine, dependable pharmaceutical products. Overheard between Henry, Clifford, and Fanny in the library of the family home.
Yes, yes, we just finished talking on the telephone to Elwood, Clifford.
How's he making out, batching over there in San Rafael?
He's a little lonesome, I'm afraid.
He sure ought to be sore at the Army, sending his bride to Korea before he's even had a chance to say hello in the bridal suite.
Mm-hmm. So that's how it is with the barbers today. Chapter 1, Book 79. There's an autumn chill in the air tonight in San Francisco, and the stars are sharp and clear in the sky. Up in Seacliff, a log fire burns cheerily in the library of the family home, where the head of the House of Barber is talking on the telephone to Elwood Giddings. Elwood is now in San Rafael and has started his dental practice. His bride, Teddy, is somewhere in an Army hospital plane, flying back home with wounded soldiers from Korea, flying back to begin her married life with Elwood. And when she arrives, it will indeed be the beginning, for their marriage is still to be consummated. Father Barber, however, is sanguine about their future as he speaks reassuringly to Elwood on the telephone.
Yes, yes, nothing to worry about at all, Elwood. Teddy will be here by tomorrow or the next day at the very latest. By then, you'll be well settled there in San Rafael, and she can move right into a smooth-running household. Yes, yes, oh, they'll unquestionably give her a day or two off, and you can get away for a short honeymoon. Eh? Oh, good, Elwood.
Henry.
Just a moment, Elwood.
It's all right, Henry. Go ahead. I didn't know you were on the telephone.
Yes, yes. Elwood, Fanny just came in. Huh? Oh,
Eldred wants to say hello to you, Fanny.
Poor Elwood. I imagine he's lonesome over there.
Here.
Hello, Elwood. We're all just fine. How are you making out?
Oh, he did an extraction today. Impacted wisdom tooth.
Yes, Elwood. We have a nice fire going here in the library. Judge Hunter is coming over. He's been very anxious to meet you. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope she does, Elwood. Yes. All right. Good night.
Hi.
Oh, Clifford, I just hung up the phone. It would have been nice if you could have said hello to Elwood.
Oh, yeah. How's he making out, Batching?
I'm afraid he's feeling a little lonely tonight. Can hardly wait for Teddy to get here.
Oh, I feel sorry for the poor guy. If I were Elwood, I'd sure have it in for the army. Sending his bride off to Korea like that before he's had a chance to even say hello to her in the bridal suite. To me, that is about the worst...
Now, that's enough, sir.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Hey, what time is the judge coming?
He'll be here any minute now. He said he'd be along about 8.
Is Jack coming over? Never hurts to meet the boss socially, they tell me.
Yes, it might be nice if Jack dropped in later, Henry. He and Betty.
Well, better wait until Glenn gets here. I got the impression that he had some business he wanted to talk over with me.
Oh, I didn't know it was business. I just thought he was coming to spend the evening to get away from that old club for a change.
Well, don't forget to put in a plug for Jack, Dad. He could use a little more dough than the judge has been paying.
I should think so. He certainly worked hard enough at that old office. Jack looks real drawn and thin lately.
Six kids are enough to make anybody look drawn, Mom.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'd hate to be saddled with a responsibility like that.
Responsibility builds character, Clifford. Perhaps if you had some of it, you could take some satisfaction in it.
Let myself wide open for that one.
Yeah.
Never mind, Henry.
Well, Fanny, I was simply inquiring.
Oh, that must be Judge Honey. Want me to let him in?
If you will, please, Clifford.
Why, certainly.
Precisely. Precisely, as the judge says.
He was imitating Glenn. Clifford's so sweet. I wish you wouldn't take those little digs at him that way, Henry.
I'm not taking digs at him, Fanny. I just want the boy to come to the realization that he's never going to amount to anything until such time as...
Precisely, Clifford. Precisely.
We'll discuss it later. Glenn's coming.
Right in the library, Judge Honey.
I know my way around here. Good evening, Fanny, my dear. You're looking beautiful as ever.
Thank you, Glenn. My, your hands are cold.
Get chilly out. Henry, how are you? Glad to see you.
Sit down, Glenn. Sit down.
And take this chair by the fire, Judge, and get warmed up a little.
Thank you, Clifford. Thank you. Invigorating weather. It's got body to it. That right, Fanny?
Well, there are times when I wouldn't mind
Precisely. Hear that, Henry? Fanny and I always see eye to eye. Only time we didn't, she made a mistake. She married you.
Oh,
yeah, very funny, I'm sure. I told Fanny that you were coming tonight because you had something important on your mind. But I see I was mistaken. Yeah. Getting the same so-called wit I've heard for approximately half a century. Oh,
you too. If a person didn't know how fond you were of one another, you'd think you were about to start a quarrel.
It's only when you're real friends that you can say the things we do, Fanny. I love this old curmudgeon here, and he knows it. That right, Henny?
We know each other pretty well,
Ben. Yeah, precisely. And I do have a couple of matters I'd like to discuss with you seriously before I leave tonight. No hurry, of course. No hurry at all.
Well, if you excuse me, I think I'll go up and see what Paul's doing at the top of the house.
I haven't seen Paul in some time. Is he pretty happy over Teddy's marriage?
Yes, he's very fond of Elwood, I think.
Understand he's a very steady, reliable young man.
Oh, yes, he's a...
Is that your telephone? Give me a start.
Yeah, I got it. Hello? Oh, hi, Hazel. Mom, yeah, she's right here. It's Hazel, Mom.
I'll go upstairs and talk to her, Clifford. Tell her I'll call her back in a couple of minutes.
She's going upstairs, Hazel. She'll call you right back.
She'll want to talk a while. Give you and Henry some time alone together.
No. It's okay, Hazel. Sure. Here, Judge Hunter's here talking to Daddy. Well, Mom will be all alone. You can gab all you want to. Okay, bye. She said to say hello, Judge.
Good. You have a fine brood of children, Eddie.
Well, this part of the brood will leave you to your own devices. Nice to see you again, Judge.
Thank you, Clifford. Give my good wishes to Paul.
Okay, bye.
Well, Henry, your family is getting so big you won't be able to keep track of all of them before long. Teddy with a new husband, and by Jupiter, you'll be a great-grandfather before you know it.
You're jealous, you old bachelor.
Yes, sometimes I do envy you. Then, on the other hand, there are times when I don't. The last thing in the world I'd want to be is a father and have to hear what I've come over to tell you tonight.
Huh?
Henry, I've debated several days about coming and telling you this, but I finally decided that I wouldn't be a true friend unless I did.
What is it, Glenn?
It's about your son, Jack.
Huh?
Jack hasn't mentioned anything to you that took place in my office a couple of weeks ago?
Well, no, not to me, and I'm sure Fanny's heard nothing or I would have learned about it.
Well, I'm glad Fanny hasn't been told yet. It'll be much better if you are the one to break the news to her.
Well, don't keep me on tenterhooks this way, Glenn. Have you fired the boy or what?
No, Henry, I have not fired Jack.
Then what is it?
Henry, we recently added a new junior partner to our firm, about 2 weeks ago, in fact. The young man we selected was not Jack.
Oh. Yes.
I know this hurts you, Henry. It hurts me very much to have to tell you.
Was this man you made a partner someone in the office?
Precisely. Lynn Jones. Very capable.
Yes. Oh, older than Jack, eh? Been with you longer?
No, Henry. Jones is not only younger than Jack, but he's been with us a shorter time.
Oh. And you say that Jack knows that he was passed up?
Yes. As soon as the promotion was official, it was announced to the entire office staff.
Yes. Would you mind telling me why the partnership was not given to my son?
Believe me, Henry, it was not a decision lightly arrived at. And I want you to know, confidentially, that I put forth every legitimate argument in Jack's favor with all the eloquence that I could command. But I was overruled by my associate.
But you are the eldest partner and the head of the firm, it seems
my
to me.
Dear that... Henry, you spent many years in business. You were faced many times with just such a situation as I was. Let me ask you this. If your associates preferred someone because they honestly and sincerely felt he was the man for the job, would you let sentiment and friendship overrule them and insist that they put in another man?
Yes, yes, I understand.
And in good conscience, I cannot say that the selection of young Jones was wrong.
But, Glenn, where has Jack failed?
He has not failed. I think he has great promise.
Well, then?
But he doesn't live up to that promise. In short, he has not grown and matured into the lawyer he should be at this time. He has brains, great potential abilities, but Jack is still a boy in many respects, Henry. I've tried putting bigger cases into his hands, but on more than one occasion, clients have come to me and complained that they didn't have full confidence in him, that he seemed too young somehow.
Have you discussed this with Jack at all?
No, he has studiously avoided me ever since we announced the new partnership. I realize that he's hurt. I can understand that. I'm hoping that he'll be able to swallow that hurt, however, and that this disappointment may serve to help him in the long run.
Yeah. Do you think that I should talk it over with him?
That's something for you to decide, Henry. Perhaps you can help him. That's one reason why I wanted you to have all the facts, so... You proceed as you see fit.
Yes, yes.
I'm genuinely sorry, Henry. And I don't want you to think your son is a failure. He isn't. I'm confident that he will be a partner one of these days. Maybe adversity will be the very thing to bring it about.
Yes, you may be right. Hard knocks are a great teacher. I wonder if I've made his path too smooth. How is a father to know, Glenn, at what point a helping hand ceases to help and becomes harmful instead? How much should you give to your children without robbing them of their strength and initiative?
Here's the family again.
What were you and Judge Hunter so serious about tonight, Henry?
Huh?
You look as if you had the weight of the world on your shoulders.
Yes, yes. Sometimes I think a father has, Fanny.
One Man's Family on Tuned to Yesterday from October 7th, 1950 on NBC. We close this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday with yours truly, Johnny Deller, next, and the conclusion of the five-part storyline, The Alvin Summers Matter, a CBS episode from the 28th of October, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Deller. I told you, that's my name. What do you want, an affidavit?
I've got to be sure.
Look, you've got me out here in the middle of the jungle with a gun in my
back. Don't turn around.
And I can't even see you. You think I'd be kidding you at a time like this?
Any move at all, and it'll be your last.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Deller. Santo Tomas, Mexico. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Deller. To the Home Office, Northeastern Fidelity and Bonding, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of additional expenses during my investigation of the Alvin Summers embezzlement of $75,000. Item 12, 2 cents. Just what I figured my life was worth at the moment. Gloria Harris had taken me down the beach and into the jungle to show me the hut where Alvin Summers had been hiding out. There was no sign of him. But I heard a noise outside in the underbrush and went out to investigate. I didn't see a thing. But I felt something. A gun barrel pressing against the back of my neck.
I want to talk to you, Dollar.
Now, you've got a quaint way of arranging a conversation, believe me. I could do better if you take away that gun.
Johnny.
Don't answer.
Who's answering?
Johnny.
Wait.
Well?
Be in your hotel room in exactly 1 hour.
Look, what's this all about?
You're looking for Alvin Summers, aren't you?
Oh, am I?
Johnny, where are you?
I've got some information about him for you.
Let's have it now.
Now. I've got to talk to you alone. Be in your hotel room in town in 1 hour, understand?
Look.
Do as I say and be sure you're alone. Alone.
Okay.
Now, just keep looking straight ahead. Don't turn around and don't tell anyone about this. Anyone. Understand?
You make it pretty clear.
I'll be watching you, Dolly. You won't see me, but I'll see you.
I can believe it, mister.
Johnny, please. Johnny, where... Oh, here you are.
Yeah, here I am.
Why didn't you answer me?
I came out here looking for a guy, remember? How am I going to find him if I start shouting at you?
But I got worried when you didn't come back to the hut.
Yeah.
That noise you heard outside, did you see anything?
No, I didn't see a thing.
Johnny, didn't you find anything to give you a lead on where Summers might be?
I don't know.
But you said if I helped you find him, you'd see what you could do about getting me a passport back to the States.
Yeah, sure. Come on, let's get out of here.
It suits me fine. This place gives me the creeps, all these trees and vines. Broad daylight, but you can't see a thing.
I know.
My imagination's still working overtime. I've got that feeling we're being watched again. Funny, isn't it?
Yeah, real funny. We kept on toward the beach. Gloria was fidgeting because she thought somebody was watching us. I was fidgeting because I knew somebody was. And I had a strong hunch he was the man whose long-distance phone call to the States brought me down to Mexico in the first place. We got back to the beach. I took Gloria up to her hotel and went down to mine in town. As I crossed the lobby toward the stairway to the second floor, out popped a familiar face.
Hello, friend.
Oh, Carson. Lieutenant Gomez let you out of jail, huh?
Oh, now let's get one thing straight, friend. I never was actually in jail.
Well, you're lucky. I've seen the jail.
Huh? Oh, well, I just had to pay a fine, and that judge they got in this burg read me the riot act, but then they let me go.
Well, good. So now it's back to selling zippers, huh?
Sure is. And I'm behind schedule, too. Checking out right now, as a matter of fact. A lot of territory to cover. Like I always say, half the world's
waiting to get zipped up. Yeah, you told me.
I did. Say, Dollar, I'd like you to do me a favor.
Oh?
That little trouble I got into last night up at the Playa del Mar Hotel, I'd sure appreciate it if you'd keep quiet about it when you get back to the States.
You mean you don't want anybody to know you got plastered, grabbed a serape, and did the fandango?
Now, Dollar...
Broke a guitar over the musician's head?
Now, can't we just forget about that?
Believe me, I had until you reminded me. Now, Carson, I'm reasonably sure we don't know the same people and won't be seeing each other again. I'd say the secret of your lurid past was pretty safe.
Well, I sure hope so, friend. But about not seeing each other in the States, I was planning on looking you up.
Goody.
Yes, sir, I got a deal for you.
Sorry, but I have all the zippers I can use at the moment.
No, that's not what I mean, friend. I've been trying to get you into a cribbage game, remember?
How can I forget?
Well, instead, I'm going to look you up in the States and let you teach me to play gin rummy.
How could I be so lucky? Oh, sorry, I think that's my phone. So long, Carson.
I'll sure look you up back in the good old USA, friend.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Keep your hands on the table.
What? Oh, my shadow again.
Anybody follow you?
Not that I know of. You're early.
I know. And I searched your room.
That's become an old Santo Tomas custom.
To make sure you really were Johnny Dollar.
So now you know. What about it?
You can turn around.
I don't know. Maybe you'll tell me what... Wait a minute. A decent shave and you'd match that photo I have in my suitcase. Alvin Summers.
Yeah. I'm Alvin Summers.
I don't get it. I had you figured for the man who made that long-distance call to the States that tipped me off to come down here.
You're right about that, too.
You put the finger on yourself?
If you want to call it that.
Well, what happened?
Your deal go sour on you, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, sit down. Take it easy. Tell me about it. I'll turn on the overhead fan. Pretty stuffy in here.
Dollar, that phone call you got just now...
Hung up. Clerk downstairs must have rung the wrong room.
Or somebody was checking to see if you were here.
Could be. Okay, suppose you start from the top.
What was that?
Relax.
What are you...
Just one of the charming features of this room. Why? You turn on that big overhead fan, it slams the balcony door.
Oh, well, turn it off, will you? I'm kind of edgy.
Yeah, sure.
You asked me if my deal had gone sour. It went very sour. Oh, I had it all figured out. I was planning it for a year. I was going to embezzle the $75,000 and really live big.
Yeah.
Instead of that, I spent all my time hiding. Mexico City, Cuernavaca, Tampico, you name it, I was there. Always undercover, always hiding. Did you ever spend much time hiding, Dollar?
No, not much.
Oh, it's a great life. Great. Every time somebody looks at you on the street, you're sure he's after you, tailing you. You wake up in the middle of the night, you see a shadow outside. Turns out to be just a bush, but you spend the rest of the night sweating. Finally, I just couldn't take it anymore. The rest of my life that way.
You know, Summers, a lot of guys figure that out before it's too late. Too bad you didn't.
Yeah. So, finally, I phoned the bonding company long distance. I knew they'd send an investigator. They sent you. I thought if I could talk to someone like you, see what could be done...
There's only one thing can be done at this point, Summers. Come back with me to the States. Bring back what's left of the money.
$60,000.
That'll help. But you know there can't be any deal.
Yeah, I guess I always knew that. Here. Take the gun.
Thanks. Now, what about the money?
It's in a safe deposit box in Mexico City. Here. Here's the key.
One thing I don't get, though, Summers.
Yeah?
You wanted me to contact, but you were sure playing hard to find.
Well, I had to be careful. I got a look at you the first day you arrived. I wasn't sure you were the one, so I decided to come to your room that night, but then I saw somebody else coming here, so I gave up.
Who was it?
The bellboy.
Benito? Hey, that'd be just before he got knifed.
Oh, no. I wasn't the one who killed him, Dollar. I'm no killer. Just the fool who runs away with somebody else's money, remember? Anyway, I didn't have another chance to get to you till today. I had to keep undercover so they wouldn't find me.
Wait a minute. Who's they?
The man who arranged for me to come down here and the girl who is going to make it all worthwhile.
The girl? Summers,
please
don't...
me, Johnny.
Gloria!
Hello, baby. Here, let me...
Leave the gun right where it is, Johnny. That safe deposit key on the table.
I guess you're calling them.
Thanks.
And it all adds up. You found out Summers here was planning to turn himself in. You didn't want that money to slip through your fingers. But Summers disappeared from his hideout. You couldn't find him, so you figured you'd let me find him for you.
That's right. And it worked. And you're so right about that money. You think I'd give it up now?
Gloria.
Keep out of it, Alvin. If you want to go back and be a Boy Scout, that's your business. But the money stays with me. Johnny.
Yeah?
This doesn't have to be the end of it for us.
Oh. So now we get the pitch about making beautiful music, huh?
I'm not kidding, Johnny. $60,000's a lot of money.
You know, you put on quite an act. Maybe I believed a little bit of it. But if I did, I quit the moment you walked through that door just now.
Okay, Johnny, that's enough. I thought maybe you'd be smart, but if you won't, you leave me no choice.
No, Gloria, don't. Gloria! The balcony. Out on the balcony.
Hold it!
Carson.
Stay right where you are, friend.
Oh, shut up. She's dead.
She crossed me.
You and she were working against each other. She wanted me to lead her to Summers. You wanted to find him yourself.
That's right. And Summers, you took a lot of finding.
That's why you killed Benito the bellboy, to shut his mouth. Then you went up to the big hotel and clowned around so you'd get arrested and that way set up an alibi for the evening.
I was pretty proud of that little idea, Dollar. And it's all worked out just the way I wanted it. You see, right from the start, I...
Carson was holding all the trumps. They were made out of lead, and I knew he was going to start dealing them any second. Then I remembered the overhead fan. The switch was right next to my elbow. The balcony door was open, and Carson had his back to it.
What are you doing?
Just turning on the fan. I need some air. Can you blame me?
Yeah. You're sweating, aren't you, Dollar? What's the matter? You losing your nerve? Well, it really doesn't matter. What
the... The door slammed. Carlson whirled, and I knocked the lamp off the table. By the time I hit the floor, my gun was up. I picked up the lamp and lit it again. Summers was crouched in a corner. Across the room, sitting on the floor, was Carson staring stupidly down at the red bullet hole in his side. I picked his gun up off the floor.
Dollar!
Summers, call the police station, Lieutenant Gomez.
Yeah, all right.
Help me, Dollar. It hurts.
Yeah, it hurts. But not as much as it hurt Benito and Gloria.
I...
You finally got me into a game, didn't you, friend? And you lost. Expense account item 13, double the amount of item 1, $440. Transportation back to the States for Alvin Summers and me. And you know, I turned him over to the authorities as soon as we got back. That's the way he wanted it. Gloria? Well, once in a while I get to wondering if she really meant some of the things she told me. Not that it matters. Conclusion of report. Expense account total $923. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. On Tuned to Yesterday, the conclusion of a five-part story heard on CBS from October 28, 1955. And that does it for this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.